We have a talk today that might be considered slightly controversial. So we want to assure you that is not its intention. About too many years ago, I was in the city of Jaipur in Rajputana, India, and visited the observatory of the Maharajas of Jaipur. The observatory is one of six ancient structures going back several hundred years. The one in Jaipur, approximately 200 years. It consisted of a whole group of stone, marble, and bronze instruments. There was no telescope, nothing to see the stars with, and the dominating instrument was a sundial 60 feet high of stone. This was not the little garden variety we are familiar with, but a tremendous instrument, and the surface of the inner sides where the shadows were thrown by the sun were all carefully marked and noted down to a fraction of a degree. A magnificent achievement in classical antique astronomy. And the astronomer who had spent a little time in England and spoke very good English was in a particularly gleeful mood. He was practically beside himself with sheer delight. With his stone instruments, he had discovered an error in the British Nautical Almanac. Now, this is one of those types of occurrences which should bring modesty to the moderns, but it never does. We are quite certain that the world we live in has been properly identified, defined, and examined by the body of modern science. Actually, however, this is not quite true, because we have overlooked something that the ancients knew long ago. We may want to deny it. We're not trying to prove to you that it's true, but has it long been held by the people with the stone instruments that the planet is not a thing, it is a being. The planet is alive. Now, this might be questioned by the physicists, and yet the physicist is here, and he has depended upon the planet for being here. All things that live in our planetary atmosphere have life, and is the source of them, the mysterious globe from which they all come, is that unalive? Can that which has no life sustain life, bring it forth, bring it to maturity? Can that which has no life within itself regulate the entire structure of the globe and everything that lives upon it? Does this same inanimate thing, can we hold it responsible, isolated as it is in space, as the source of all life for us, and yet have none itself? The ancients could not conceive of such a circumstance. They had to recognize the planet as a living being. The moment we have the planet as what the Kabbalists and Hermetists call the microcosm, then we also have the macrocosm of the solar system. And we come to the realization gradually that the solar system is not something wandering about in space, subjected only to physical laws. All physical laws are subjected to something else. Beyond the ordinary ken of the average person, there is a vast invisible. And yet from this invisible, all things come. Therefore, it is not exactly proper to say that the invisible is nothing. It may not be a thing, but it is the source of all things. Therefore, out of that which apparently has no existence, modern intellectualism has tried to pour the vast accumulation of forms of life and laws of life and ways of life. The ancients had a different viewpoint on this, and I think sometime part of that viewpoint at least is going to be justified. We are going to realize that the planet is a living entity, that it is as a being. And as an entity, it is surrounded by magnetic fields. And these magnetic fields help to sustain the life that is on the planet. And all things living upon the planet are subject to its laws. Only that which is not upon the planet or not visible or physically existing can evade the inevitability of natural law. Well, to go a little further into this type of thinking, we find to the ancients that the planet had an aura. We begin to suspect from studies in Zen and Orientalism that the human body has an aura. And we gradually come to the realization that there is much of similarity between the human body and the planetary body. That both, in a sense, are sustained by the same life, both are subject to the same laws, and each has its entire destiny framed into the pattern of the house in which it lives. So we have now a human body with its magnetic fields. We have a planet with its magnetic fields. Now, the human magnetic field can have no origin other than from the planet. It is not something separate. It is not a divided thing. It is a division of one greater thing. Therefore, we all are dependent upon the same energy field for survival. This energy field is in the magnetic field of the planet itself. It has its rules. It has its laws. And the same magnetic field, when it is enclosed within the human body to make the human being alive, is the source of our life. It is what gives us the skill and strength to exist. It helps us to unfold the potentials of ourselves. And every little atom that is within our bodies is dependent upon this great plan, just as surely as every human being is dependent upon the great plan of the planet on which we all live. Now, it also happens that there can only be one magnetic field, but it is infinitely diversified within itself, but never divided. Every human magnetic field is part of the world field. Every magnetic action of the human being is part of a tremendous field of interaction in the planet. Now, we come to the problem, we might say, of the psychic fields of the planets, at the human bodies, and all the different forms of life that exist within the visible ken of man. We have a realization at last that the magnetic field of the planet is that which brings us our own personal magnetic field. That all human beings are dependent upon one magnetic power to complete the manifestation of their own lives. This magnetic power sustains emotion, it sustains action, and is the final source of generation. There is only this one life, and we all share it. And because we all share it, and because it is all one in substance, the action of every living thing modifies that field. Every individual's contribution to life is either to support or to tear down the magnetic field of his own body, which by transference becomes a disaster to the magnetic field of the earth. In other words, our own emotions, our own thoughts, are in common with others of our kind, but they also all arise from the energy fields of the planet. Now, what is a planet? Well, we have all kinds of definitions for it. But we know really very little about it, actually. The ancient Aryan astronomers of the Far East said that a planet is a fetus. A planet is a sun not yet born. Only the suns are born. The planets are all embryos. And they are all tied to their parent sun by a magnetic umbilical cord. And this cord is attached to the north pole of the earth, the magnetic pole. And the excretory system of the pole is the south pole. And energy is moving from the sun through all of these fields of magnetism. and ensouls the earth with an energy which sustains all the flora and fauna and every living thing, including ourselves. We are all part of this unborn planet, a planet which is going to become born as a sun. And when it is, then it will create its own offspring and progeny, just as in the family of human beings. In nature, everything is generating, and everything that is generated is regenerated. So the planet becomes a kind of a prenatal womb in which a new sun is preparing to manifest itself, is to graduate forward and become a free spirit in the great sidereal atmosphere. Now, as we study this a little further, we come to another interesting point, namely that all forms of life on a planet are like beads strung upon a single thread. They are all part of this magnetic field, sustained by it. And when they pass out of physical existence, there is no change in the magnetic structure. It simply means that a body is no longer there to be magnetized, but somewhere else another body has come, which will be magnetized. But the magnetic field is the energy which makes all things animate, and it makes all things capable of fulfilling the destiny which is their proper kind. And it produces the necessary internal motivations and insights to carry on the process of evolution. So now we come to our little problem of the morning, and that is, as long as the human being is living off of the planetary atmosphere, just as much as he is living off of the harvest of the physical planet, he is bound into an economy. He is made to realize, if he can possibly be converted to the thought, that it is purposely, definitely a part of his plan that he shall cooperate not only with others of his kind, but with all living things and all laws pertaining to living things. The idea that the human being is different from everything else is one of the most objectionable forms of egotism that exists. And it gets the whole world into trouble all of the time. Here we are completely indebted to life for everything, and then we try in our own feeble way to destroy the very life upon which we depend. We neglect the realities in a desperate effort to advance the egotistic systems of our own making. We try as hard as we know to destroy the very source of our own life. So we find interesting things as we go down through the pages of history and through the pages of physical science. There is and always has been a close association between human conduct and the laws of nature. Man does not create natural law, and he cannot change natural law. Where he attempts to break the law breaks him. He is here to live through obedience, and through obedience to become absolutely unaware of law. When he doesn't break law, law is love. When he breaks love, love suddenly becomes law. Where there is obedience, there is no pain, no misery, and no destruction. But where self-centeredness causes the individual to disturb his basic relations with the magnetic field of the planet, there will be trouble. Now we just pause for a few moments and study the human side of this matter. Here we are as little beings upon a large planet. We recognize four basic types of life at the present time as evolving on our planet. The first doesn't seem to be evolving much, but we call it the mineral. And we know the mineral does grow, and we know that the mineral does have life, and in recent years the study of crystals has changed our entire point of view concerning the contribution of minerals and metals and stones to the evolution of mankind. The same energy is locked in them and is useful if understood. The second type is the vegetable kingdom. And the vegetable kingdom is the basic source of our nutrition. It is also the most important of the seed factions in life. And all things are seeds except sons that are born. The earth, therefore, is a seed also, just the same as it is a fetus. Then comes the animal kingdom. An animal kingdom is evolving from its own rights and its own core. It has nothing to do with the Darwinian theory whatsoever. The animal kingdom is a major form of evolutionary life, and it is growing up just as the plants and the minerals are. And then the fourth type is humanity. Humanity, and this planet, has never been an animal, although it has passed through states of development which might cause a superficial examination of certain basic traits to bring up this speculation. Man is not a highly evolved anthropoid. Man is a human being and has been a human being for a very long time. But as a human being, he has passed through all stages of life, just as he recapitulates the human, animal, vegetable, and mineral forms in the development of the embryo, which passes through all the previous conditions before it comes into birth. But here we have on the planet and in man now a being that we can see. Man is something quite visible and subject to every type of mood you can think of. He is the most complex organism that we know, which only means that we don't know very much about any of the others. But the human being has sickness, he has pain, he has sorrow, he has lawsuits, he has wealth, poverty, and loss. He has everything you can conceive of. And these all manifest, exist, and develop or are retarded by changes in the magnetic field. So man, as a starting out in life, has this field upon which he is to depend for energy. Now, he can't destroy the field, because the field belongs to the planet and in turn belongs to the sun. And the major sun and all its other satellite suns are within the cosmic field. This wonderful great energy field man cannot destroy, but he can destroy his own link with it or break down his own relation with it. The more seriously he breaks this down, the more he becomes a victim of his own corruptions. Therefore, we may say, for practical purposes, that we are looking at a planet when we look at a human being. For in this human being, there are all forms of life, mineral, vegetable, animal, and finally, the human spirit itself. This field is subject to innumerable dissonances which we can recognize. We have the fearful person whose energies are completely misused in agitation. We have the self-centered individual whose ambitions divide him from the natural plan. We have the conventional misfit who refuses to become a worker in any constructive area. We have all kinds of criminals, delinquents, and we have a vast mass of persons who drift along, do the day's work the best they can. All of this is part of a magnetic field condition. And as we look at the individual, we see various things happening to him. We see that, for instance, at certain periods in life, he may develop an acne, which will disfigure his face and embarrass him. The world can have an acne also. The world can be rheumatic. It can be dyspeptic. It can do all the things that the human being can do. The planet can get into trouble just as much as we can. But the planet gets into trouble just as the human being gets into trouble because some creature is breaking or disturbing natural law. If we expect to be healthy, we've got to keep the rules right. If we expect the planet to be healthy and provide us with a living for untold generations, we have to treat the planet right. If we do not, we will be in serious trouble. Now, we are suffering at the moment from a bad case of smog. We have had a lot of smog around here. Why? Because of the intensification of industries, because we have had no thought or no consideration for common sense. With all the emphasis upon profit and fame and gain, we have allowed ourselves to create a condition that endangers the atmosphere of the planet. Now, the planet is made to take care of bad atmospheres. All planets are. All living structures have to prepare to take care of mistakes or faults or failings within their own structures. But in the case of mankind, we have a deliberate process over a period of centuries of avoiding all of the facts of life. Now, science has become a custodian of certain concepts. Science tells us that we don't need to worry about these things because there are no rules. The only rules there are physical. And these rules are amoral. They have no consequence of resulting from good or evil. These rules do not care what we do with them. We can break them. It doesn't mean anything because they have no force or power or reality in themselves. This point of view has allowed us to get about as sick as any evolutionary structure has ever been. We are not aware of the fact that we are part of a world of moral value, and that the great magnetic fields and the various auric fields of energies are all keyed to a moral code. Every principle, factor, every substance, every nature in the planet is either used or abused. If it is used, it strengthens. If it is abused, it weakens. And this is a very definite rule, regardless of what anybody thinks. Now, it may be possible to argue that a misuse does not constitute a moral error. In most cases, it does, however. The only possible explanation that is not clearly responsible is ignorance. Well, ignorance was all right when we had to be ignorant. But ignorance is not natural to us any longer. It takes a long kind of special training to become thoroughly ignorant now. We have to make a career out of it. We have to settle down and work on it. And one by one, kill out all of our own common sense and all the things that make value to us in daily living. Because every one of nature's processes are keyed to morality. There is good and bad in all usage. And the good usage is the usage that nature respects, or which automatically supports, defends, and expands nature. Misuse is always a source of trouble. Now, we look back over the last several thousand years of history, and we find a long, terrible, terrifying account of misuse. Now, strangely enough, this misuse is not all due to ignorance. It is to a kind of ignorance, but it's the kind of ignorance we don't even want to talk about. It's the kind of ignorance which no one should really suffer from anymore. But it still dominates human life and dominates the various industrial and economic processes of humanity. It even has gradually infected some of the animal kingdom, but the animal kingdom has not yet developed the great malady of ambition. Now we are here on this planet with a toxic atmosphere. This toxic atmosphere is making many of our communities difficult to live in. Now, why do we have this toxic atmosphere? It is because we have focused all of our attention upon certain projects which in themselves are of no interest whatever to nature. The solar system doesn't care whether we build more electronic plants or not. If we build them and use them wisely, nature allows it to happen. If we build them and use them unwisely, they destroy themselves because they are at variance with the motion of infinite and inevitable reality. Therefore, everything that we do should be to find out how to do what will protect us from our own misuses. And this is where we have to come into the problem of nature. Every bit of energy that we misuse is derived from our energy pool. It is the energy of the earth, and it is the energy which the earth finally takes from the sun itself. Everywhere we have rules of usage. Usage which means growth. Usage which means a better life for all of us. But the individual who expects to enjoy the products of right usage must not break the rules. Or if he does, he finds himself picked up and carried along by a chain of retributions which he does not want to face, but which he will have to face. We at the present time have forgotten completely what the human being was supposed to do and be. A study of the invisible magnetic fields of the human body are very important. We can see how the moods and attitudes and convictions of people change the coloration, which is a symbol of the psychic energy of that person. We can see what thunder and lightning comes from in the human being, a temper fit, an unpleasant occurrence, a kind of cruel or unkind word, and the magnetic field of the human being changes color. Forms arise in it, vibratory patterns, which become the basis of physical disorders. The individual with the temper fit has already polluted his own atmosphere. He doesn't have to wait for the smog to do it, he does it himself. Every time he goes into some kind of a mood which is destructive and dangerous to the common good, he has created this mood himself, and it is turning about on him. And there's not a little atom, cell, or molecule in his constitution that is not going to suffer from his nasty disposition. Now, we can keep this studying, and we can find disease after disease that will arise inevitably through the corruption of the energy forces which maintain health. Yet we find it's more simple to try and pass over all this lightly. We don't realize, however, that it is also pouring into the planetary body. We've noticed lately, and there's been a considerable emphasis, and was among ancient peoples also, namely the importance of the purifying of the atmosphere through religious conviction. Nearly all ancient people had rites and ceremonies for purification, for the purification of the body, of the mind, and purification of belief. Also, nearly all religion was aimed at one thing, making the power that be, the powers that be, happy and contented. The moment the individual begins to practice value, this value shows up in his own magnetic field, and from that reaches over to become an enrichment of the whole magnetic field. Whenever the world produces a great teacher or a great leader or a great idealist, the whole of humanity benefits. The moment the individual corrects his own faults, the whole of humanity benefits. And as more and more people do this, so the world benefits. Everything depends upon the direction and use of these magnetic forces. And the individual has to control them, and the power that in him that controls them is the power of moral force. The integrity of the person, his unwillingness to compromise his principles. Now we are looking forward to a very good example of the present problem. The world is at a very nasty point in its history. Nearly everything the human being has invented, devised, or publicized has been in some way corrupted. It has been used for exploitation and not for common good. Practically every ideal and motive of the human being is self-centered. And this makes a vast amount of difference. Here we have approximately 6 billion people incarnate at one time. And that amount of misuse of a basic natural energy is bound to have very serious consequences. You cannot break rules that much and that often and not have trouble. And we're proving that right now. We are proving that half or more of the planet is in a state of bordering on war, that the economic condition is terrible, that racial hatreds and animosities are dominating everywhere. And all these things are followed by what? The worst weather we've ever known, of volcanic eruptions, tidal waves, cyclones, and all types of malaise, we'll say diseases, epidemics, and all this type of thing. These chain reactions are simply set up as centers of infection within the magnetic field of the Earth itself. As a human creation today, we are practically enveloped in our own smog. We are infected in something with something we can't see, but it is the disintegration of our idealism, the failure of our hopes, the disappointments that we are facing, and the disillusionments that we have with leadership in every field. We have gradually created a very toxic atmosphere under which we must function. And as this spreads, it spreads not only around us, but within us, because we are all taking our energy from the same pool. And if that pool is corrupted, everyone suffers to a degree. When we destroy the purity of drinking water, we all get sick. When we destroy the purity of the life energy upon which we live, and which is given to us as a means of survival, as we adulterate, pervert, and proselyte in these areas, we get sick. And we're going to get sicker still if we don't stop doing it. Now, this is not a matter, basically, of theology. It is just a matter of right and wrong. And right and wrong are far older than any theological system. It means that the individual has got to clear out a lot of toxin within himself. And this psychic toxin is affecting nearly everyone. It is destroying the average person's sense of values. It is destroying the average person's integrities, or cutting them down. It's making all the natural and good things of life more difficult to find or work with, simply because we have gradually polluted not only our own bodies, but the air we breathe. We know this physically. No one ever questions it. We know we're in very bad condition. We know that we're in trouble with all the transportation practices. We are corrupting the Earth's atmosphere constantly. And as with all of our knowledge and all of our skills, we do nothing to correct these basic factors. Instead of passing laws against this or rules against that, we have got to sometime face the fact that energy, life, has to be used well and correctly, or it will turn and destroy the person who abuses it. Nearly everyone, more or less, abuses life. They abuse the powers that were given to them to help them to grow into wonderful people. Now, a lot of persons say they would be better if it was a better world. Well, as you can reverse this and say, it would be a better world if these people did things better. But the fact remains that we are faced with a very serious disturbance, namely the loss of the control of our own action. We are gradually changing the planet into a cesspool. This is obvious. Is there not some answer to this? Why are we continuing to develop more and more material to dump into the cesspool instead of finding some safer way of just disposing of it? We keep on making all the mistakes, but we do not work on the remedies with any great enthusiasm. The reason why we don't work with the problems more honorably is because to do so would interfere with profit, would interfere with the person's ability to be the richest man in the neighborhood. To make the necessary correction, we would have to be honest. And this is the one price the world in general does not want to pay. They want to have the better conditions, but not to pay for it. Now we hear the smog problem, and we know that it is largely a matter of disastrous attitudes within ourselves. Most people are worried, and legitimately so. Most people are confused, frustrated, and mistreated according to their own standards of thinking. Nearly everyone, therefore, is a negative thinker. They are thinking in terms of what's the matter, and they are willing to pay for some sort of help as long as it doesn't mean they have to change their ways themselves. They do not want to change their ways. They want a world that changes to meet their desires. This will not happen. There is no way in which the planet can take care of this problem. There is no way in which it can work with the problems with which it has been burdened. If we study the planet in terms of its internal structure, we will find that it is classified and stratified very much like a solar system. It has its own interior structure with all the magnetic adjustments and problems. It has elements within the core which we do not know very much about. But it has a tremendous connection, umbilical cord, tying it to the sun. And it is from the sun that all this energy is finally disseminated through everything, including agriculture. It comes up to us as our food. It comes through to us as everything we do and have. It comes through as our institutions, our schools, our churches, our laboratories, our office buildings. Everything is maintained and stratified and vitalized from the energy field of the planet itself. And therefore, everything that happens on the Earth is either in harmony with or disharmonious with the energy standard of ethics. Energy has its own standard of right and wrong. And it serves either good or bad. But when it serves bad, it violates its own code, and there is disaster. War is an example. Petty politics is another. Inordinate ambition is another. All of these things are against nature. And we are now trying to find ways to correct some of these things. We're saying we must find a solution to war. We must find a way for preventing nations from going to war. We must find ways to even out the life standards of people so that abject poverty does not exist side by side with great wealth. We have to get over our religious intolerances and misunderstandings and realize that we cannot worship our God by hating our neighbor. We have to go over everything that we do and straighten it out. And as we straighten it out, the smog will clear. As we straighten it out, we will discover that the smog is really obscuration. It is the gathering up, as in physical smog, of fumes, of neglected things, of misusages of one kind or another. It is built up of unused wastes that are not properly disposed of. We are not working really now to prevent these wastes. We are working to find some way of disposing of them. The ounce of prevention hasn't come into our mind as yet. But it has to come in, because this is a small planet. We are not one of the big ones, not one of the major ones. We are just a very moderate-sized one, which means we have to take pretty good care of it. It is, however, wonderful in some ways. Imagine that one little ball, only about 8,000 miles in diameter, is able to maintain a population of 6 to 8 billion people. It will be able to take care of even more than that. The 7th billion is on its way. But it will have the power to produce the food. It will have the ability to contain and sustain the problems of twice its present population level, but only if it is done right. We cannot make mistakes forever and never reap a disaster. To make the planet provide us with what it can, to make all the natural processes work, to have the chemistry, the wood, the art, the all of the different sciences, the religions and cultures, to have these things flourishing constructively, happily, and together, we have to change the basic way in which we estimate these things. We're going to have to begin to use, instead of abuse, the resources of the planet. No one is thinking much of that. One of the days we think of it, we always say, well, maybe by that time we'll get a spaceship so we can go to a different planet and start over again. We're not really satisfied just to ruin one planet. We'd like to get a chance at the whole solar system. And even that would not take care of the ambitions of some people. But actually, we've got to solve it here. because when we solve it, we grow up and become people. The great mystery of humanity is very simple. We've got to learn to work together. We've got to learn to protect each other from each other. We've got to build the understanding and the strength of character and the means to sustain and preserve our survival until the work of the planet is completed. It has its own cycle, and we have our cycle. Our cycle demands that we have to outgrow the planet. And in order to outgrow the planet, we're going to have to do something much better than we've done up to the present time. Now let's take a little look at the body system here. Supposing we estimate the fact that there are more cells in the human body than there are human beings on the earth. In fact, there are probably more than there are humans, animals, and plants together. And these all work together under certain laws of organization and integration. Yet one sour note by a person can sicken that whole structure. We tear down a body that should last us more than it does, barring accidents or circumstances beyond control, but we can sicken this body with all its inhabitants, and these little cells, theoretically at least, will not know why. They will not know why they are no longer nourished. They will not know why the energies of life are turned away from them. They will not know why a great disaster, a stroke perhaps, disables the entire body. They will have no understanding of how and why these things happen. But they do happen, and they do affect everyone. And it's exactly the same thing with the study of the human body. 9 times out of 10, the ailment that affects us physically will begin with some inharmony between ourselves and universal law. In some cases, we don't know what the inharmony is, so we have to take it. But there are things we can do every day to reduce the hazards that result from the natural or unreasonable abuse of natural materials. We can work daily a little more wisely, a little more intelligently. You take, for instance, the mineral kingdom. The mineral kingdom is ruled by a magnetic field that is diffused. It is sort of in an atmospheric fog that runs through the planet and takes care of the mineral, placing part of a germ of life in each germ of mineral structure. Every mineral has a vibratory note of its own. This is now beginning to be understood, and a new therapy and psychotherapy are developing from the understanding we have of minerals and gems. We've always suspected the vegetable kingdom of being very important. We not only have considered it as a source of nutrition, but also as a use of medication. We have gradually studied medical botany, and minds like Paracelsus and Culpepper have done a great deal to prepare herbal and natural remedies. The plant kingdom is governed by an energy that moves from the core of the earth outward. In other words, it radiates. It's an energy from inside the planetary core that radiates more or less equally all over the Earth's surface. Where there are impairments, where it cannot function, then we have deserts or oceans. But even in the oceans, the plant life is still active. The motion of the plant energy is vertical, from within to the circumference. The animal energy circles. The energy field circles the earth, going around it, and passes therefore through the spine of the animal in a semi-horizontal position. Gradually, as the animal evolves, it has a tendency to become upright. But then, for the most part, the pure animal energy goes around the earth in a kind of like a cyclone around the central band of the planet.